Listener Production.
Hi, I'm Nat Kringoutis and welcome to The Wellness Collective, the podcast dedicated to helping women feel happier, healthier and better. I'm a natural women's health expert with over 17 years experience and I'm passionate about helping women feel great in their bodies and minds. On this podcast, I cut through all the noise in the wellness space by interviewing experts from around the globe to discover the very best ideas and theories that will help you improve every aspect of your health. Okay. I am going to go out on a whim here and say that if you are listening to this podcast, you probably have a fair idea that your gut matters, that gut health is pretty much the center of your health and everything exists around it. Well, if you didn't know that until then, now you do. But I do hope that this is something that the majority of people have actually figured out. I think we accept our gut to be such an important part of our health, yet it's still this area that we don't know a lot about. Or for what we do know about it, I still think that there's catch-up that's happening when it comes to the health providers that we go and we seek help from. So I love that we've got Dr. Vincent Pedre on the podcast today. He's a dear friend of mine and such a gentle, giving, loving person. He's here to share his wisdom when it comes to his own findings as a medical doctor when it comes to gut health and how he actually had a pivotal turning point where he says that he studied medical acupuncture and had to really unlearn a lot of what he'd learned to integrate what he started to discover alongside of integrative and alternative medicine. And you're going to hear a lot today about not just symptoms of gut issues and what that looks like, but some actual tools that you can implement and start at least getting more curious around. I'm going to let Vincent do the talking. I'm excited for you to listen to this episode. Dr. Vincent, thank you for being here today.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. I mean, I enjoy talking with you on and off camera.
I know, right? We could probably talk all day. I had to kind of go, all right, let's press play. Let's press record, whatever it's called. I know you're awesome, but we need the rest of the world to know. Not, I mean, look, I'd love them. I hope the rest of the world is listening to the Wellness Collective, but if even just all of the people that are listening. Let's talk. You are, I would say, one of the most respected people when it comes to gut health. And this just didn't happen yesterday. I think it's been probably a lifetime of learning. How is it that you found yourself as a doctor looking, I mean, for me, I want to tell you, I fell in love with Chinese medicine because it was all about gut health, even though we don't call it the gut. Everything is about it. And it made so much sense to me. And this is like nearly, you know, more than 25 years ago. I wanted to learn and understand, how did you get to this point to go, okay, I need to change my focus and I need to start to educate people on gut health, because obviously, even though we know it, there were so many things that we don't really know or didn't know.
Yeah, totally. And I discovered it back in 2006, 2007. And before that, honestly, if you had told me that I was going to end up specializing in gut health when I was in high school thinking of applying to medical school, or when I was in college applying to medical school, or even when I was in medical school and then applying to residencies, I would have looked at you and said, that is the last thing on my mind. Because the digestive system is like the, you know, I feel like there was a lot of, I'm going to say there's a lot of sexiness to the heart, the lungs, like the endocrine system, the hormones. Like, there was a lot of really cool stuff. And then there's the gut. Yeah, you eat food, it breaks down food, you digest it, and then it makes this nice smelly poop that comes out on the other end.
Depending on what you've eaten.
How important could that be?
Here's a question. How much education did you get about gut health as a doctor when you were training?
I mean, I was trained as a Western doctor, like a general Western doctor. So we learned about the digestive system, we learned about the hormones, the things, the enzymes, all that. But we weren't taught to appreciate the functionality of the gut and the importance of the gut border as the interface with our immune system, the command central of our immune system. And so I think if that they had presented it differently, I would have probably been more interested in the digestive system when I was in training. But you know, if you were interested in digestion as a doctor, then you became a gastroenterologist, which means that you put long tubes into people's orifices, mouth or anus, and you look inside. And that just didn't feel attractive to me. I didn't want to look at people's stomachs, or I didn't want to look at people's colons. Like, and partly because I've always been more cerebral. So for me, what's interesting is putting puzzle pieces together and understanding why a system has broken down and how to put that system back together. And that's missing from regular Western gastroenterology, where you give people medicines to treat their symptoms, but you're really not treating the root underlying cause. So it's almost like you're in a room and you're trying to cover the shadows, but you're not looking to see where the shadow's actually coming from. You're looking in the wrong place.
I mean, that happens a lot with medicine, really. Unfortunately, we look at the symptom and treat the symptom, and before you know it, that's a slippery slope often, because we just continue to chase symptoms rather than look at what's actually happening. So
Yeah,
when did you
we treat the
decide?
fruit and not the root.
Right. When did you decide? Was it through countless patient encounters? Like, when did you decide that we needed to actually focus on this more? Well, at least for your patients.
Well, the crazy thing is that it was right under my nose. I had gut issues my entire life. My gut was completely messed up by the 20 plus rounds of antibiotics I was on between 10 and 19 years old. My microbiome was wiped out. I developed leaky gut, and I developed sensitivities to wheat and gluten and wheat and dairy. And that's what I was eating all the time: ice cream, cereal, milk, milkshakes, sandwiches with cheese, pasta covered with cheese. Like, that was my diet growing up. So I thought that this is the way you normally eat because this is the way everybody eats. And I just feel crappy because this is my lot. These are my genetics. This is the way I was born. My older sister had an iron stomach. Nothing affected her. And I was the canary in the coal mine. And I just thought that I had to live this way, even through medical school. Like, I was always really, even though we didn't get nutrition, I was really curious about nutrition because my dad was very interested in it. He had a little bit of knowledge, not enough, but enough to ask questions and wonder. Because the flip side of it was that not only was my gut a mess, but so was my immune system. And I just kept getting sick over and over and over. And I couldn't gain weight. When I went through my growth spurt in my early teens, I became so thin that they used to body shame me for being thin. They made fun of me all the time. Chicken legs, skinny Vinny. Yeah, horrible. Yeah, for anybody listening, getting body shamed for being thin is just as bad as being told that you're fat. You know, I think a lot of times we think that you won't tell someone they're fat because that's mean, but you body shame people for being too skinny. And the way the person takes that in who got body shamed is the same as if it was a fat person who was told you're too fat. You develop this body dysmorphia, and I definitely had disordered eating as a teenager. And I went through periods where I was either worried about being too fat because my older sister had like basically drilled into my head never to get a big belly like our dad, or I felt that I was too skinny and I needed to put on weight so I would binge And I would eat until I almost felt like I needed to puke because I was so freaking full. And I went through cycles of this as a teenager, not feeling harmony and peace with my insides. And then eventually that kind of quieted down, but I lived with what became IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, and a whole host of gut-related health issues. You know, sometimes I was really fatigued. Sometimes I would break out in eczema in my hands. I would get cold sores in the mouth, not cold sores, ulcers, those aphthous ulcers. And I didn't realize that all of this was just kind of like this domino effect that had happened. And here I was in residency training, working 100-hour weeks, thinking that I'm exhausted because I'm not getting enough sleep. And they're feeding us pizza and soda at lunch for our noontime lectures. And I would have a pizza, and then I would feel like I needed to take, like I couldn't keep my eyes open. And then I had to run to the bathroom. And this would repeat over and over. But it wasn't, you know, it's one of those things like you think, well, this is what everybody's doing. So it doesn't quite click, but there's a part of you that knows it's wrong. And then yet you're not quite connecting the dots. So you continue to make the wrong choices. Because by then I knew I was lactose intolerant, but it didn't mean that I always stayed away from dairy because I was like, well, I could, you know, cheat a little bit here and then you pay for it. Or you go out to a restaurant and you forget to ask, is there cream in this sauce? And then you're running to the bathroom afterwards. So that went on for years. I mean, even when I was a doctor, and then I discovered functional medicine and I rewrote when I learned about the microbiome, the gut, everything about it, I went back and rewrote my medical history and I realized what had happened and that I didn't have to live this way. And I started working on my gut. And I just became really curious about patients who came in with gut issues because they always kind of stumped me. Because I felt like medical school only taught me like five options, like give somebody an anti-diarrheal, give somebody something to poop, give somebody an anti-acid medication, give them an antispasmodic, or give them an antidepressant because they have IBS and they're probably depressed and that's why they're having gut issues.
Wow.
Hello?
Wow. Wow. Right? Like,
so I wanted a bigger toolkit. I felt so unsatisfied with the toolkit that medical school and big pharma had given me, and I didn't believe in it. I always believed in natural remedies. So I was looking for the language. I was looking not just for the language, I was looking for my tribe because I felt like a fish out of water. And I finally found it. I mean, even before I went into functional medicine, I trained in medical acupuncture in the US. And that was huge for me because medical acupuncture opened my eyes to systems biology and how everything is interconnected. And it's what allowed that flip of the switch in my brain that started undoing the programming from medical school. That then when I discovered functional medicine right after I did my medical acupuncture training, functional medicine made sense because of my training in acupuncture. And I started understanding, wait, all of this is interconnected. What's happening in the digestive system, your hormones, your skin, your brain, all of this.
Yeah.
And I just became really curious with patients. So it wasn't that I was trying to become an expert in gut health. I was just pursuing what I loved and what I found fascinating. And what I felt true to my heart was the place that I could help people the most. And it was also the most authentic place for me because I had suffered at that point for more than half of my life, 2 decades with gut health issues. And I was able to reverse them really easily by making changes in our lifestyle. Like we became a gluten-free house. We're really clean about what we bought, making sure to buy organic vegetables, like humanely sourced meat. Like we, you know, couldn't control exactly what you did when you ate out, but we controlled what we ate, what we cooked at home, what our son ate, So we became a very clean household, and my gut health started improving by a lot. It took a bit. You can't reverse two decades worth of damage in little time. But what I did notice is that within 2 weeks of changing my diet and cutting out gluten, my energy started soaring. And my mental clarity and that need to take a nap at 3 p.m. when I was in the office and I was dying. I was in front of a patient and I was struggling to keep my eyes open. I mean, if it was a cartoon, I would have grabbed like toothpicks and like propped my eyelids open,
right?
Because I was so ready to pass out. But what did I have for lunch? I had a pizza. I had a sandwich. So I had gluten, and gluten was just putting me to sleep.
Right. I mean, I think we understand, I would hope most people would recognize that some of the symptoms that come along with issues with gut health are those digestive issues, like, bloating, gas, constipation, diarrhea, maybe reflux. I think a lot of people can identify with feeling like that. Some of the other symptoms that you've already mentioned, fatigue, skin. I want to know, outside of those, what are some of the more, not obvious symptoms that you've seen with patients? Because for that person listening, I want them to be able to connect and go, oh my goodness, maybe it is my gut and I didn't even realize. Yeah. What are some of these other symptoms that we're seeing?
Skin.
Yeah.
Adult acne, hives, eczema, psoriasis, even urticaria, where your skin is just itching and you don't know the cause for that. I'll tell you, can I tell you a short story about that?
Please.
So I was in Africa, in Tanzania, with a very small group. And at some point, we're getting to know each other. And of course, once people know you're a doctor, they'll start telling you health things. And this one guy in the group was from India. And he said, it's so weird. For the last 6 months, I can't live without taking an antihistamine. And if I don't take it, I get really itchy. But what gets most itchy are the palms of my hand and the soles of my feet. And he's from India, which doesn't matter because actually you can have parasites anywhere. But, I'm talking with him and I can't test or anything. We're in the middle of like safari out in the middle of nowhere in Tanzania. And I tell him, there aren't many parasites that have very characteristic symptoms, but itchy palms and itchy feet, soles of your feet, is a characteristic sign of Blastocystis hominis, which is a very common worldwide parasite. It's found in India. It's found in the United States. I detect it all the time in my patients. And he says, well, I went to my doctor and they said they checked and they didn't see anything. I'm like, well, it's not normal to take an antihistamine. Again, that's the top-down approach. Treat the symptom. But hey, why is your body producing excess histamine?
Mm-hmm.
And it's specifically in this way. So he went back to India, got retested, diagnosed with blastocystis. I told him what to take, and he's off antihistamines.
Fantastic.
Now, I didn't really get into gut health. Now, you don't have to have gut health symptoms, even when you have a parasite. So you can show up with fatigue, with joint aches, even on blood tests showing up with whole host of autoimmune antibodies, like a patient of mine did. And she had no gut symptoms, ruled out all sorts of infectious diseases, things that could cause inflammatory arthritis. She also had blastocystis, very common, but she had yeast. We treated those two underlying issues, the joint pains, the fatigue that she thought was related to being a new mom of a four-year-old, and the hives all disappeared. We had changed the diet. We had taken her off gluten and dairy. Just by doing that, what were the Western doctors ready to do? Put her on immunosuppressives, prednisone, and biologics to block her immune system. Rather than ask the question, why is the immune system going haywire? Again, command central is the gut. So if your immune system is going haywire, open the hood of the car and look under the hood, look at the gut. But the other things that are connected to the gut, the brain, there's so many interconnections with now so many people developing dementia, and even the rise of how many people are getting Alzheimer's. You know, the Alzheimer's rates are rising like in the millions, and you can't explain it just by genetics.
Right.
They actually did a mouse experiment with a mouse model of Alzheimer's. Now, mice are not people, but we use them as models for disease. And so this mouse model for Alzheimer's had beta amyloid plaque in the brain. And then they compared it to a group of germ-free mice. So germ-free mice have no bacteria. They don't have bacteria on their skin. They don't have any bacteria in their gut. So it's a model that's used to see what is it, what role does the gut and the gut microbiome play in disease? Well, the germ-free mice weren't building beta amyloid plaque. But when you put them in the same cage, the mice eat each other's poop. So the germ-free mice acquire the gut bacteria of the Alzheimer's model mice. And guess what happened in their brain next? They develop beta amyloid plaque.
Right. Wow.
So we're finding that the gut is interconnected with so many things, with metabolism, with how you absorb calories and how your body holds on to calories. So if you're trying to lose weight and you get to a certain point and you can't get back to that weight that you used to be, so you're at this weight loss plateau and it's like you just hit a bottom ceiling, you just can't get past that. When that happens, don't get frustrated. Look at your gut, because the reason is probably related to the gut. The gut is blocking your ability to lose those final pounds because you're inflamed.
Mm.
You know, you could have dysbiosis, you could have a parasite. Maybe you just have a leaky gut and you're absorbing a lot of inflammatory substances through the gut that are activating your immune system. It can scramble the way that you metabolize sugar, and it can also scramble the function of your mitochondria. So then it zaps you of energy. You know, just thinking back to the patient that had the fatigue, and she thought it was because she was a new mom, but it was the fire brooding in her gut. And again, for anybody listening, she had zero gut symptoms.
As in, no diarrhea, like digest, no constipation. Yeah. Yes, right.
You don't have to have gut symptoms. And for anybody who checks out my book, which is up there, The Gut Smart Protocol, and takes the Gut Smart quiz, you'll notice that I don't just ask questions about your gut. I ask questions about the rest of your body. And the reason for that is that I want to tease out all the ways that your gut might be affecting your health.
Ask also about anxiety and depression being linked to, because you've touched on dementia and you've touched on a few other things. In your opinion, what about anxiety and depression?
Absolutely. There was actually a study that came out in December in Nature. And I believe it was done in the Netherlands, where they looked at over 1,000 patients and they wanted to compare patients who had depression to patients who didn't have depression. And they did stool PCR analysis. So they're looking at microbiome, the stool, and see, are there differences in the microbiome in the gut of a person who's depressed versus a person who's not depressed? And when they filtered down the data, they found that there were 13 different bacterial taxa that were different in the depressed people. And some of them, God, these sound like Disney villains. They're Egerthella, Coprococcus, Pungatella. And I was reading the paper, and one of the overarching themes, the difference between the gut microbiome of a person who is depressed versus the one of a person who's not depressed, is that the microbiome of a person who's depressed tended to create more inflammation and had lost the ability to reduce inflammation. And it was doing it through many different means, and it affected the serotonin pathway and the balance of tyrosine metabolism, but also something called TMA, trimethylamine, which is something that is a breakdown product from L-carnosine or phosphatidylcholine that comes from red meat or from shellfish. Now, someone listening might say, well, are you saying that red meat, shellfish are going to make you depressed or going to like cause more inflammation? I've looked at these papers and my conclusion is that you can eat these foods, and I am a meat eater, so I'm not going to give up my meat. The antidote is making sure that you have a plant-forward diet and you're eating a lot of plants in there. But the TMA gets absorbed, gets converted to TMAO in the liver, trimethylamine and oxide. And that TMAO travels through your blood, gets into the brain, and causes inflammation, leads to depression. Now, there was another study. So you asked about anxiety. This study was actually done on healthy volunteers, and they wanted to look at their response to stress. So they used the standardized stress score called the Cohen's Perceived Stress Score. And they did a four-week intervention. They had a control group where they just gave them general diet guidelines like, hey, avoid processed foods, don't eat too much sugar, but nothing too more specific than that. And then the intervention group, where their hypothesis was that the microbiome played a role in how we perceive stress. How interesting is that?
Wow. Wow.
And they had these people increase their fiber intake to 5 to 8 servings per day. They also increased their grains and they increased their fermented foods to 2 to 3 servings per day. So you had a high fiber, high fermented foods diet group. Because most people don't eat a lot of fermented. They eat zero or less than.
Very little. Although I think that yogurt does the job.
And then you had just the regular diet group. This was actually a study done in Ireland. So they were telling them to eat the Irish food pyramid, which I don't know how it is, but if it's anything like the US food pyramid, it's completely wrong.
I think
wrong.
The Irish food pyramid is potatoes.
Probably potatoes at the bottom.
Potatoes and whiskey or something like that.
and Guinness.
Yeah, Guinness, that's it.
Guinness is food. Guinness is food. So they did the score at the beginning and then the score at the end. There was no mental health intervention, so there was nothing else, like no mindfulness or meditation or no other ways other than we're just working on your diet and we're going to see how your stress is perceived from the beginning to the end of the study. It was 4 weeks long. The intervention group with the high fiber, high fermented foods dropped their stress score by 32%. The non-intervention group, 17%. So, you know, you can say there was a placebo effect from being in the study, but still from 17 to 32%, it's a significant difference.
Yeah.
And then to understand it even more, to say, okay, does diet really make a difference? They had the people who were on the diet document their adherence to the diet. So it wasn't like, okay, we're trusting that you're doing this diet. We want to know how adherent you were. And adherence rates were from anywhere from 20% to 80%. And then they looked at the data separately for these groups, and they found that the group with the highest adherence, 80% adherence, dropped their stress score the most.
Right.
And it was linearly related. So if they were 20% compliant, they had less of a drop in their stress score. So then going back to thinking the gut microbiome is sending signals to the brain, either through the bloodstream or through the vagus nerve, that are then controlling our stress perception. You know, and I have like a little part in the book where I talk about, I kind of joke about who's really in control, who is the puppet and who is the puppeteer. And I kind of say like our microbiome is the puppeteer and we're the puppet.
Yeah, it's true. I want to ask a couple more questions here. Okay, so we've identified that maybe I have some gut issues and I'm taking out, this is what I feel like most people do. They go, oh, you know what? I'm really sensitive to gluten. Take out the gluten. Right.
Yeah.
Feel much better. But if they have gluten again, then they feel horrible. And in my professional opinion, I would say you've removed an offender, one of many offenders, gluten being one, stress being another, environment being another.
And just as a little side note, it could be that gluten was the offender. It's very possible that the offender, because I test people for this, some people react to non-gluten wheat proteins.
Right.
There's ones called serpens, purinins. And then the third thing is they could be reacting to the fructan sugar in the wheat, or they're reacting to the pesticides that are used to cultivate the wheat plant.
Right. Well, let's say they've taken it out for whatever reason that it's triggering them. I feel like the majority of people feel like that's the work. The work is taking out the gluten or taking out the dairy or taking out the sugar or taking out the alcohol. No. Right? I'm like, but what
that's
now
part
you
of it.
Well, what I say is that would take you out of a state of flaring, right? You're not flaring necessarily.
Yeah.
Now what? We have to repair. I would assume that's what you would say next. It's time to now. So how is it that, okay, we've identified we need to take these things out. What does repairing the actual gut look like? I know that we need to go and get your book. But what would you say that, like, in a nutshell looks like?
Yeah, first you need to find out what your gut type is, and then you'll know which program to follow. But really, repairing the gut requires a holistic approach. And whereas most people are going to put all of their focus on food and diet, which is really important, and of course, removing all the obstacles to healing, which may be more than just gluten, maybe it's pesticides in the food, maybe it's other things that are to be discovered, environmental chemicals, mold in your environment, other things that are obstacles to healing. And that's all important. And then introducing the right foods, like fermented foods, like fiber-rich vegetables, healing spices like ginger, turmeric, fennel. But the other part of it that we can't ignore, and you can try to bypass and you can try to get away with it, but it's just going to come back to bite you until you deal with it, is your stress and the overactivation of that reptilian brain, the limbic system that many people are living in because of current stress or because of past stress and trauma that has programmed their brain to live in more of this fight or flight response. If you don't deal with that, you're not going to fully heal because the stress is acting as, while you're doing the diet and you're kind of removing some of the big insults, the stress is like going yang, 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 yang. It's attacking your gut.
Well, it's interesting.
Stress is an attack on the gut, and stress is going to increase gut permeability. So
right.
It's going to cause leaky gut. So you're trying to heal leaky gut, but you're still living your stressed out lifestyle. It ain't going to work. You've got to do both. You've got to do diet, supplements maybe, and remodulate your nervous system, that's why I have a whole section in the book about this.
Mm.
Entire section.
So important. I talk about having been sick with COVID very early on, but then having long COVID and having a lot of issues, one of which was I hadn't had eczema since I was 18. And it flared up like, I mean, what are we talking? 26 years? Hang on, is that right? Yeah, 26 years later or something since I've had. Anyway, so, that was really odd to me in the sense of, well, I get it. I understand why it happened, but I wonder how many people had reactivation of previous illnesses and especially gut.
COVID triggered a lot of, in long COVID, it triggered a lot of mast cell related issues.
Absolutely.
Immunologic issues, immune dysregulation, reactivation of old viruses, EBV. All of that stuff. I mean, I've seen it with patients. And the thing is that a lot of people don't realize, but COVID infects the gastrointestinal tract.
Mm.
And you can actually, now they've shown in studies that you can detect spike protein in the stool for up to 7, I think even up to 9 months after you had COVID.
I wonder what it is for people that are suffering with long COVID. I wanted to tell you this story though, because so I went through a pretty intense kind of recovery process once I actually realized what was going on. Because also, so outside of the norm, obviously living in Melbourne, we had lockdowns, like nothing was normal. So it was very hard to pin what was actually happening. And then I realized I've got long COVID for sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, went on a fairly deep dive of recovery for that. And I would say 90% better of all of last year. Then this year came and I had a really, really stressful event happen, which I didn't actually feel that stressed about. Like I was like, I feel like I'm fine. Like, but my eczema came back and nothing else had changed except for this stressful event, which just proves your point.
You know, I love that you just said that. Because that's something that I for the last two decades of treating patients in New York, something that I've always highlighted with people is, you know, New Yorkers and maybe Aussies too, down under, you guys have some of the most deadly animals, so you've got to be resilient. you know, we live with stress, right? So your mind, your thoughts become like numb to the stress. And then you start thinking that it's normal, or you just don't think like, oh, it's just, you know, whatever. But your body, your body doesn't lie, and your body's going to be freaking out. And that's what I call the difference between mental stress and what I call biophysical stress. The stress that is being read by your body, that maybe in your mind, you're telling yourself, I'm not stressed, but then you come in to see someone like me, who's a body whisperer, and I tell you, no, your body's telling you you're really stressed. Do you realize that? You're breaking out in eczema. You have, you know, X, Y, and Z. You're having migraines. Your body is stressed.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what happened, actually. The migraines came first. And then they went, and then the eczema came. And I mean, it's just fascinating to me because, like I said, I would honestly, after all the things that have happened in the last 3 years, I would say I actually physically felt okay in my body until my body started to show me we're not okay here. Have some migraines, have a bit more eczema, and then, you know, so we're back again. We're back. And the nice thing about that, though,
the body doesn't lie.
Doesn't. But the nice thing about it is,
the body doesn't lie.
I know what to do straight away to actually start to put the wheels in motion to restore that.
You know, usually it's basically a return to self-care, self-love, like really shining a spotlight on where you've kind of exceeded your limits.
Well, I'll tell you what I've done. I've finally surrendered to having to meditate.
Ha-ha!
now I'm like, oh, this is actually like, I know for all this time, I've known that this is the thing that had to happen, but I've finally surrendered. In fact, I meditate.
You want to hear something crazy?
Go.
I learned to meditate when I was 21 years old in 1995 because I was worried that I wouldn't be able to become a doctor because I was scared of needles. So I learned to meditate and do breath work to overcome my needle phobia so that I could become a doctor.
That's amazing. Well, I already know. I think we all know the benefits of meditation, but I was like, oh, fine, it's time. Like, you know, I am at that point where, I'm ready for
it. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge, and I'm really excited because For the GutSmart protocol, I teamed up with several like well-respected meditation teachers and breathwork teachers, you know, Sachin Patel, world-renowned Qigong master, Lee Holden, and Emily Fletcher and some other people,
awesome.
And even myself. And we came up with meditations and breathwork for the gut.
Fabulous.
And the cool thing is if people, well, one, I want people to get my book, but if they go to gutsmartprotocol.com under resources, I interviewed every single person who contributed to the book. And I've got the breathwork and meditation exercises there guided by the actual teacher. So you can not only read it in the book, but I think there's so much value to having the person guide you through it. And I broke it up so that you can actually even just get the audio of the meditation itself and not have to listen to the whole interview. And that's where the power is. I mean, that's where the healing is for the body.
Amazing.
When you can shift out of that alarm state and basically activate the vagus nerve, which is the parasympathetic, which tells your body that, you know, you want to reprogram your body into feeling safe when things are good.
Yeah.
You know, because I was actually listening to a podcast today, and it was actually a really interesting contrarian viewpoint that sometimes when people have been chronically ill, they start to interpret that they are safe when they are ill. That shifting the body, like that sometimes shifting the nervous system too quickly can be a bit of a shock for the person. But the way I see it is that when you're in chronic illness, it's usually your body's in fight or flight, you're in survival mode, you're stressed about the illness. If you weren't stressed about life, now you're stressed that you're not getting better. So now you're living stressed. And to me, it's a place of lack of safety. Like your body, your home temple, your body temple has become a place that has become foreign to you. And that's why the meditation that I created for the book, I called the Gut Love Meditation, because I realized from taking care of patients would come in with gut issues. And now I'm talking about people actually have gut issues, because like we said before, you don't always have gut issues. But the ones that came in with chronic gut issues, their stomach, their intestines, their insides felt like their enemy. They talk about it like this enemy. And I think part of the healing that a person needs to go through is that gut love is changing, reframing the relationship to a part of their body that has betrayed them, and embracing it again and visualizing that healing that can happen for them. And I do believe the power of visualization and even affirmations of things that exist before they exist. You have to believe that the healing can happen and that shift can happen. And you just kind of, the same way that when you just start to meditate, you don't really feel what's happening. You know, sometimes it takes a month. God, when I started doing breath work at 21, I was just going through the motions.
Right.
Like I'm like, okay, at some point, is this going to work? But I had such a strong desire to conquer my needle phobia and to change my internal type A personality that I just went on the belief that this has been scientifically proven and I'm going to keep doing it until I can feel it myself.
Yeah. Amazing.
And it didn't take long.
Yeah.
You know, I started feeling changes within a month. And then 3 months in, 6 months in, by the time I got to medical school, which was 8 months after I had started breathwork and meditation, I was perceived as a completely different person.
Amazing.
My classmates used to call me the Zen guy. And little did they know that 8 months before, I was this mental storm on the inside.
Okay, so people need to go and get your book, The Gut Smart Protocol, which is
I'm
so excited for them to get, and obviously tap into your resources.
GutSmartProtocol.com, by the way, for resources.
Oh, yeah, TheGutSmartProtocol.com. Well, thank you so much for chatting and sharing all your wisdom. I'm so excited for people to actually get this information because I think this has been lacking. I think everybody knows that they need to support their gut, but they haven't had a resource to show them how. So thank you for your work.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure. And thank you for spreading the word with your work.
You have to believe the healing can happen to actually experience the healing to happen. That is such a hard place to come from, but it is so true. And I think your subconscious is so silly. It'll believe you if you start to tell it that things are getting better. However, our default is to always look at what's not working. So if you're heading down the road of gut recovery, first and foremost, absolutely check out Vincent's work. And also just take it one step at a time, but start to look for evidence of where recovery is happening. Start to look for evidence of how or what is working, because we're very good at looking at what's not working, but the recovery actually starts in seeing what is working. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. I have thoroughly loved listening to Vincent today. He's such a delight. Make sure you go on over, throw him a follow on Instagram. He shares lots of tips and tools there as well. That's it from me today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Wellness Collective. And until next time, I hope it's left you feeling happier, healthier, and of course better. Bye for now.